you. So today is Father's Day, and we're going to continue to focus on our theme for June, which is accountability. Accountability. And we're going to look at the father within in this theme of accountability. So fatherhood is more than just a biological thing. It's about relationships. That's really the whole essence of the idea of fatherhood. It's about relationships. We always live in relationships to ourselves, to our family, to each other, to our work associates, to life in general, to life itself. And when we become aware, we also realize that we're living in relationship to that divine presence or life of God within ourselves. And so that's what we're always honoring and recognizing, is that relationship that we have in our lives. Ernest Holmes said, he's quoted as saying, God is our heavenly Father and our spiritual mother, the breath of our life. God is the changeless reality in which we live and move and have our being. And Jesus said, I and the Father are one. The Father that dwelleth in me, he does the work. So we must come to sense this marvelous presence, for this is the secret of good metaphysical work, that there's just one life, one presence, and we are one with it. It's that idea of relationship and oneness that enables us to heal our lives and to express in our fullness together. So let's take a look at what it means to be a father or a parent, because that fathering energy can be expressed through women also. So let's take a look at what it means to relate to our own spiritual life as the parent to ourselves. Jesus gave us the example of living in relationship with this divine energy by calling it Abba, Abba. There isn't really a word that translates, that's the Aramaic, but there isn't really a very exact translation, but it means more than just father. It denotes a interpersonal relationship, and that's what he was describing as he called God Abba, Abba. So the word in Psalms, it says, ye are gods and are children of the Most High. So establishing in the Old Testament the idea that we are in divine relationship with this presence and power. And the word Abba is used three times in the New Testament. It's used in Mark, Romans, and Galatians. And in each case, it's followed by the Greek translation, Father. But it actually is more than that. It expresses a warmth and a parent-child relationship that is very significant and meaningful. So what I'm saying about fathers today applies equally to mothers and to anyone involved in the ongoing care of children or other people or of ourselves. We are parent to ourselves also. So we have a lot of ideas in race consciousness. We've talked about race consciousness as being the general theme of thought that most people have. And fortunately, we are changing some race consciousness beliefs about what a real man is. You know, if you watch any of the old John Wayne movies back in the 50s and 60s, you'll see that a man was described in a macho way of being the man who was strong and silent, never talked, never communicated. I mean, heaven forbid that he ever had a meaningful dialogue with his girlfriend or with anybody else. But now we're understanding and realizing that a real man has real feelings. Real men can cry. Real men can express love. Real men can express their feelings in a very important way. Real men can realize that there's a power greater than they are that is working through them, and that can be the successful experience of relationship in their own lives. It's okay for men to know that they're not alone, that they have a higher power on whom they can depend. So thank goodness there's a revolution going on in humankind, and it's a spiritual revolution as we allow greater facets to this understanding of real men and what fatherhood is all about. There's a famous scientist who said, as far as we can go into outer space and see what we can with the Hubble telescope, we're just getting to the tip of the iceberg on how far we can go into inner space. We can go equally far into inner space. So those are the realms that we're developing in consciousness, in spiritual consciousness, that depth of inner space. I want to tell you a story about the man whose life precipitated Father's Day. His name was William Jackson Smart, and he was a Civil War veteran. And his wife died in childbirth, giving birth to their sixth child. The child lived, and so he had an infant baby and five other children to take care of, the oldest being a daughter who was really helpful. But he raised those children. He dedicated his life to being the parent, the mother and the father to those children. And so as his daughter came to age and looked at the situation, her name was Sonora Smart Dodd. As she looked at the situation, she said, you know, we have a Mother's Day that honors mothers, but we don't have a Father's Day to honor fathers, and this isn't right. There are men like my dad who have been outstanding fathers, and we need to recognize them also. And so it went before Congress the first time in 1914, but because it was an all-male Congress, they didn't want to be self-congratulatory or patting themselves on the back, so it wasn't approved. It wasn't brought into law. Do you know how many years it took for that to happen? 62 years. It wasn't voted into law until 1972, when President Richard Nixon signed that into law, that the third Sunday of every June would be Father's Day. And so that's how that whole thing started. Thanks to Sonora Smart Dodd, who was wanting to honor her father, William Jennings Smart. These names keep getting them backwards. Okay, so I want to tell you another story. And this story goes back to 1918. And it was about two little boys who were growing up in England. They were of different backgrounds and different means. One little boy was the son of a farmer, and he had to work very, very hard plowing the fields and helping on the farm. And the other little boy had more means available to him. So on this one particular day, these two boys were out in an area fairly close to one another. The farmer boy was pushing the plow, and it was behind a horse, and they were plowing and tilling the land. And the other boy was swimming real close by in a river. And the little boy farming could hear all the laughter and the talking and the frivolity among the boys swimming in the river. And then he noticed that it turned from laughter into screams for help. He heard this voice saying, save me, save me, I'm drowning. So he put down the plow and he ran to the river and he pulled out this little boy and revived him, resuscitated him, and the little boy was fine. So he went back to work. Well, fast forward a year. A year later, the same little boy was out in the field plowing, and a man came up on a horse, and he said, excuse me, son, are you the boy who rescued my son last year who was drowning in the river? And the farmer boy said, well, yeah, that was me. He said, but, I mean, anybody would have done that. I just heard his cries, and I just did what anybody would have done. And he said, well, I want to tell you that you saved his life, and I want to do something for you. He said, if money were no object, what would you like to do with your life? And the farmer boy kind of smiled, and he said, well, I'd really love to be a medical doctor, but that could never happen from my family's support. He said, more than that, he said, I'd like to be a medical researcher. I would like to research medicines and find a way to help the people, because we have so many people dying in my village here, and I'd like to find a way to help them. And so the father of the boy who almost drowned said, well, I'm going to pay your way through school. So if you want to become a doctor, you will become a doctor. So that was But that was the first part of the story. Now, the second part of the story took place in 1945. So that was 1918 to 1945. So this young farmer boy grew up and did his thing and learned to be a doctor. And so in 1945, in February of 1945, you may remember that that was a very important date. It was at the end of World War II when the big three were coming together, Roosevelt, Stalin, and Churchill, to make plans to bring peace to the world at Yalta at the end of World War II. And so there was some question right at the end, right before this meeting was to take place, there was some question as to whether Churchill was going to be able to make the meeting because he was very, very ill. Well, there was a new medication available. You may have heard of it. It's called penicillin. Well, it was shipped to him, and he was injected with penicillin, and within a day, he was better, and he was able to make the meeting. So that was the second time that Alexander Fleming saved the life of Winston Churchill. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what does that have to do with fathers? Well, it was the father of Winston Churchill that saw the situation and took action to provide a good turn for this young farmer. He acted in a very responsible way, and because of that, many people were helped, not only around the world through the peace conference, but also through the through this invention or discovery of penicillin and the benefit to all of us. So think about your own dad, your own father in your life. You may have gone through your life up to this point, I'm hoping we can change that today, thinking that maybe some of the things that your dad did were not quite good enough. They were not quite right. They were not quite what you needed. But what I want you to think about is the fact that your dad did the best he could. He did the best that he could at that time with what he knew and understood and had available to him. So maybe you were lucky enough to have a dad who did a lot for you continually and continues to do for you. And that's an incredible thing. Or maybe you had a dad who you were lucky enough to learn self-sufficiency from. That's another way of looking at it, isn't it? Self-sufficiency. That's an important gift too. So there's a book written by an author by the name of Cheryl Stade. And the name of the book is Wild. And Sharon Stade was in her late 20s, and she was taking a walk. She was walking a trail walk from the Mojave Desert in California to the Bridge of the Gods in Oregon. It was called the Pacific Crest Trail, the PCT. And she mentioned in this book several times how difficult her relationship with her father was. And after she had walked for 50 days on the Pacific Crest Trail, she wrote a very poignant statement in her memoirs that she was keeping. She said, "I didn't know my own father's life. He was there, but he was invisible. A fire so far away that it's nothing but smoke." That was her impression of her father. She said, "That was my father, the man who had fathered me. It amazed me every time, again and again and again, of all the wild things that happened in my life. His failure to love me the way he should have has always been the wildest thing of all." Then Cheryl was able to realize that perhaps she didn't have to be defined by that loving and by that unloving and neglectful father. She put it this way: on that one night, on the 50th night of her walk, as she gazed out across the darkened land, 50 nights somehow in on that trail, it occurred to her that she didn't have to be amazed by his lack of fathering anymore. She could be amazed by so many other things that she had seen and experienced on this walk, that was what could fill her soul with amazement. She could be amazed at all the beauty and all the good in the world. She said, "That opened before me like a river, and I began to cry. I began to cry and I began to laugh all at the same time. And I wasn't crying because I was sad, And I wasn't laughing because I was happy. I was crying and laughing because I was so full. I was so absolutely full of amazement and joy at the experience of my life. She said, I wasn't crying because of my mother or my father or my ex-husband. I was just crying because of my fullness. Cheryl was leaving behind some old concepts, some old ideas, some old mindsets, some old thought forms, and she was moving into a new experience of amazement, being amazed at the fact that here she was out on this trail being totally self-sufficient, and that she had seen rattlesnakes, she had seen bears, she had had all kinds of challenges and obstacles to overcome, and she had done it. She had done it. She had it within her to do that, and she recognized that there was so much to be grateful for in her life, and that she didn't need to focus on what she had perceived as being absent or lacking in her life. So if your father is still alive today, I urge you to contact him and tell him that you appreciate him, that you respect him, that you know he did the very best he could do. And if your father has passed on, you can know that time and space is not relevant to prayer, that prayer is a statement of the heart, and that we can be just as much in touch with someone who's passed on as we can with someone in their physical form. So you can connect and say, I miss you. I long to talk to you again. I realize the older I get, the smarter you were. I realize now as I go through some challenges of my own, what you had gone through, and I know you did your best. That can be a very healing thing. You can reframe that, whatever your experience was, and you can think of what good things came out of that experience of having that person as your father, whether it was self-sufficiency, whether it was emotional independence. There's all kinds of things that you can be grateful for. I'm very grateful to my father because of some of the gifts that he gave me. He gave us a beautiful piece of land on which we could build our home, and we could have room to invite guests in and have wonderful celebrations there. I'm very grateful to him for that. And I'll bet Renee is very grateful to her dad for the land that she is able to have a blueberry farm on, which nurtures all of us. So we're grateful to your dad for that. Thank you. So I'm sure if we use our mind, we can think of things that we are grateful for to bring that experience of fathering to a very loving place in our hearts. So James Allen said in his book, As a Man Thinketh, he said, we take the tool of thought and shape what we will, bringing forth 1,000 joys or 1,000 ills. We think in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but our looking glass. So we are father to our own lives by our thoughts and our beliefs. So if we don't like what we've been experiencing, we can reparent ourselves. We can go back and have a change, a shift in our thoughts and in our beliefs, and create new joys for ourselves, new experiences for ourselves. And in our New Thought Trinity, we have the idea, instead of calling it Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, we call it thought, belief, and manifestation. So we take the thought, that becomes the belief in our experience, which becomes the manifestation in our lives. So we perfect that through the use of spiritual mind treatment or affirmative prayer. An affirmative prayer is positive, it's purposeful, and it's powerful. It's positive because it anchors our consciousness in the infinite, in the truth about who we really are. We not only acknowledge that we have a relationship with this divine presence, but we identify with it and we unify with it. We form a relationship with it. And it's also purposeful because we use conscious choice to create the mental equivalent of what we want to experience. So it's very purposeful. And it's powerful because as we declare the truth within ourselves and we put that together with feeling, we create a power in which we can create change in our experience. So it's very powerful in that way, taking our thought and our feeling and bringing them together and planting that in the seed of the law. It's kind of like gardening. You take a seed, you put it into the soil, and you get a plant. Well, we take a thought, we put it into the soil of our belief, and we get an experience. So we can be very careful, purposeful gardeners in our own lives. So when we plant thoughts of love and joy and self-acceptance and put them in the belief of our own inner being, we get experiences that reflect that. And if we have, through inattention or perhaps negative habits, if we have planted thoughts of hate or despair or rejection, then we're experiencing the results of that too. We're experiencing separation, loneliness, and rejection in our own lives. So we can become better gardeners. We can pull up those ideas that we may have planted erroneously and let the divine inspiration help us plant ideas and thoughts of truth about our lives. Each of us are full participants in this reality that we're living in. And through the clarity of our thoughts and our beliefs, we generate our own life experience. So in a very real sense, we are the father or the parent to our own lives. And so a successful father, a successful parent must be involved, must be emotionally involved, physically involved, involved in as many ways as possible. So we too in our own lives need to be involved in our own spiritual growth, in our own lives, showing ourselves that we matter, that we care, that we are there for ourselves, just as a loving father would do for us. So if you fail to step up and take responsibility for your relationship to life, then you're probably going to experience confusion, a lack of purpose, and a general sense of dissatisfaction. So you can reparent yourself to give yourself a better experience, a more solid grounding of appreciation in what the gifts of life are in your experience. Now, very few of us had perfect fathers or mothers, but also very few of us were perfect fathers or mothers. We always did the very best that we could at the level of our own understanding. But we do learn, don't we? We do learn. We have that opportunity to get better as we go along, to acknowledge and express the perfection that lies within. So we can commit to being in relationship with ourselves and with the infinite presence. And when we're involved in the now moment in our lives, our future can be filled with light, with love, and our past can be given new meaning. It's never too late to have a happy childhood. As we look back, we can reframe it. We can see it differently. And it's never too late to parent ourselves more effectively as we go forward in our lives. So we want to be actively involved in parenting ourselves, to seeing the good that we are here to express and supporting ourselves in that. You might think back to things like, I remember my dad teaching me to ride a bike. How many of you learned to ride a bike with the assistance of a parent? Many of us did. Okay, sort of. Yeah, did they just turn you loose down the hill? That was Marvin's experience, I think. And so we can think back to all the different ways that we might not have even thought to appreciate the parenting that we received. And we can realize that it was there for us, maybe in ways that we did not see and acknowledge at the time, but ways that we can see and acknowledge now going forward. So if it's your lot to be a better father now, do so. If it's your lot to be a better mother now, or a better grandmother, or a better aunt, or uncle, or whatever it is, do so. If it's your place to be a better parent to yourself, do so. Treat yourself just as you would want a loving father to be treating you. That's how we can keep this father energy circulating and rotating in our lives and in the lives of those around us. So I have an affirmation that I want to share with you. It was the third one on our affirmation sheet. It says, one spirit, one love, one life. It's father and mother to us all. I live in that spirit. I am that love. I am that life. I accept the challenge to parent my own life. Let's read it together. One spirit, one love, one life. It is father and mother to us all. I live in that spirit. I am that love. I am that life. I accept the challenge to parent my own life. And so it is. Namaste. Let's just go within and have an anchoring prayer. I'm grateful that we have this opportunity to celebrate that divine fathering energy in our lives, in our physical lives, in our spiritual lives, and in the lives of others that we can share it with. Just as Winston Churchill's father shared that fathering energy and benefited the world, so we can share that fathering energy in our own lives to be a beneficial presence to those around us. I am grateful that that fathering energy lives on through our hearts, through our minds, through our intentions, and through our acts. And the world is uplifted and encouraged and supported as a result. I'm grateful for all fathers everywhere who are learning and growing and fulfilling the role of father to the very best of their ability. And I know that they are divinely guided and supported as they continue to grow and expand in that endeavor. We are all truly blessed, and so it is. Amen.